Back together again, you and I chatting it up Friday style, June the 26th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show dissecting a bill in D.C. for a $25 an hour national minimum wage, supported by Connecticut Democratic Senators Richard Blumenthal and Chris Murphy. We also welcome Town of Orange Fire Marshal Jamie Vincent on fireworks safety, and Republican State Senator Dr. Jeff Gordon chimed in about a new report regarding some Connecticut state colleges.
$52,000 a year, about $1,000 a week. Sounds pretty good, right? 52 grand? I think somebody with maybe not a lot of revolving debt, maybe not a car payment, maybe somebody who watches how they spend their money as a single person, or even as somebody who may have a kid at home, 52 grand is above the poverty line, of course. And if everybody made 52 grand a year, I think the world would be a better place. I'm not trying to wax poetic here, but 52 grand is not horrible. It's not great, but it's a lot better than 30 or 35 or 40. And again, when we do these things, we talk about them, you know, pre-tax, after tax, after all the federal and local deductions, it's a lot less than 52. I mean, if you go by my rule, which is about 35% loss, you're probably looking at, about 36 grand, 37, something like that? I don't know. It depends where you fall in on the tax bracket. So, Paul, what is the wonderment, Paul? What is the notion here about $52,000? Well, I whipped out the old computer calculator here and double-checked it on my phone, too. And that's what the federal minimum wage would pay if it is raised anytime soon to $25 an hour. And this is a plan, a proposal that has at least one Connecticut member of Congress signed on to it. Chris Murphy says here, it's been all over the media the last few days. I'm looking at the version here in the Hartford Business Journal. It was linked to that on the Capitol Report. Chris Murphy wants to raise the federal minimum wage to $25 an hour. Now, you may say, well, wait a minute, what about the state minimum wage? State minimum wage, or wages, state's minimum wages, are set by individual states, and they are in compliance as long as they pay at least, or if not more, of the federal minimum wage. Now, the federal minimum wage, surprisingly, is still just $7.25 an hour. So in this country, you can pay somebody as low as $7.25 an hour. I know it's literally the cost of a fancy schmancy coffee or mega frappe latte drizzling with extra. You know what I mean. I mean, $7.25 doesn't even pay for a good amount of fast food anymore. But the Living Wage Act for All would increase the current federal minimum wage a bit from $7.25 to $12 an hour in year number one, with additional increases over time to get to eventually $25 an hour. So right now, the federal government only says to be in compliance, anybody offering to pay somebody for a job here in Connecticut or anywhere, you know, around the country would only have to pay. And it's a shockingly low number. Now, again, nobody's paying $7.25 an hour nationally. You have minimum wages that are tickling $16, $18, $20, $21 an hour here. So this is fascinating to me. And you know what my thoughts are. They've always been on minimum wages. Pay whatever you want. If you have a legislative body that says, you know what, it's far time that everybody should make at least, again, 2,080 hours times $25 an hour, everybody should make $52,000 a year. And there are economists who would say that the more money people make, the more money they will put back in the system. And the system, the money that's in the system kind of acts as the lubricant and lubricates the economy. And, a lot of lubricant economists would say, well, you know, if everybody made eventually minimum $52,000 a year. That'd be a good thing. There's more money to spend, more movies to go to, more overpriced coffee, more overpriced sandwiches for lunch or dinner. But as it is right now, what's Connecticut pay, like 17 or 18 bucks an hour, something like that? So, you know what? It ain't that far away. The bill would also phase out sub-minimum wages for tip workers, workers with disabilities, and youth workers. Now, see, that I don't like. If somebody, and you know what the sub-minimum is, you get employees to work for lower than the minimum wage if they keep or split tips. That's communist. All right, you not giving somebody the opportunity to work for a little bit less if they get tips, and nobody's forcing them to do this. See, the lefties love that because everybody needs to be equal because tips aren't fair, you know. Well, okay, they're not fair because you're not making them. I know people at restaurants around town here where I am in Wallingford today at home in Casa de Pauli, and they're like, no, I mean, I would tell some of my favorite barkeeps and restaurant folks, servers, I say, hey, you know, they're considering this bill. And woman I've gotten food from for years going, what? I didn't hear about that. No. So, you know, for God's sakes, Chris, Senator, with all due respect, get away from phasing out that sub-minimum wage for tip workers. Murphy's office says 67 million workers, nearly half the U.S. workforce, currently earn less than 25 bucks an hour. All right, I'm not going to argue with the numbers. But I love to hear your thoughts here. And you know what? Here's my call. Here's my thought on this. Go for it. Raise the minimum wage to 18, 20, 25, 30, 40 bucks an hour. Go ahead. Do that. And let's see what happens. Murphy's bill is co-sponsored by Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, Andy Kim, and Ron Wyden. Companion legislation has been introduced in the House. The state's minimum wage is already above the federal rate, increasing to just under 17 bucks, $16.94 on January the 1st. So are you into this? Do you think it should be 25 bucks an hour? Because then some of those folks, they can afford better housing. They can buy stuff. In other words, lubricate the economy. Or is 25 bucks an hour nuts? Do you think that's crazy? Is that cray-cray, as the kids like to say? $25 an hour. That's what Connecticut U.S. Senators Chris Murphy and Dick Blumenthal think should happen eventually. And I got to tell you, we're not that far away. It's 17 bucks an hour now in Connecticut. It's higher on in other states, too. We'll go over that momentarily right here. Coming up, 203-333-9422. Question of the day, 333-WICC. Talk or text. Chris Murphy proposes raising the federal minimum wage to 25 bucks an hour. Your thoughts? You tell me. Coming up right here. It's a sunny Thursday on WICC. Yeah, we flipped the switch back in November of 1926. Now, I don't think I was there. I'm trying to remember if I was or was not. No, we're coming up on number 100 this November, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. A lot of folks chiming in on this one already. If you want to chime in at our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct, or you can chime in on the text screen or on the telephones as well as 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Chris Murphy, one of our Senate members, Richard Blumenthal, our senior Senate member, and a couple of other Democrats are saying, hey, they want to introduce a bill, and I'm going by this version here in the Hartford Business Journal. By the way, the name of the bill is the Living Wage for All Act. It would increase the federal minimum wage. Yes, there are two levels of minimum wages here in the U.S. States can decide what they want to pay on their own. And in Connecticut, we're closer to the 25 bucks an hour that Mr. Murphy and Mr. Blumenthal want. We're right now at $16.94, so 17 bucks an hour. So again, if you whip out the calculator here and you figure 2,080 hours a year at $17 an hour. That's a minimum wage. And again, this is all before taxes. I get it. I understand it. So if you make that money over a 2,080-hour regular foray into a year, you're not going to have 35,360 buccarinos to spend here. You're going to have significantly less. In fact, of that 35 grand, you're probably going to end up with about 23 grand. That doesn't go too far in Connecticut. Now, if you go by Chris Murphy's plan and Mr. Blumenthal's plan and Ron Wyden and a lot of other progressives in D.C., you get 52 grand a year as your gross, and your take home is probably going to be about $34,000 a year, all right? So 34 grand a year, so that is just a hair under $3,000 a month. Is that worth it? Should the minimum somebody makes from any job be $3,000 a month? I mean, you could argue, yeah, because then you need less poverty programs. You could have a viable market for more money in the system. More stuff being bought, lubricating the economy, keeping it going. People may be able to afford, you know, some level of health care. I'm not so sure about what that would be. But then again, if you're paying somebody the minimum at 52 grand a year, are you providing employer health care? So that is where we start today. Think about that. Now, I know and I'm already getting messages here about this on Facebook. Hey, it's going to mean $40 hamburgers. Well, would it? See, here's the thing. Whenever you talk about raising a minimum wage, here's the thing. What happens is when an owner of a business is told by any governmental entity, hey, you have to pay more. Well, a few things could happen. One, the number of hours, shifts, or employees could not change. And the owner could say, you know what, I'm passing all this cost onto my customers and take a bet that he or she will maintain more of those customers. Or you could say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to pass any of this onto my customers, so I'm going to keep my prices the same. And I'm going to cut the number of hours I have my help working, or I'm going to cut the number of workers I have, or a combination of workers and help and all that. You see how that works? Or you could have a combination of both. You could say, well, listen, I'm going to cut back a little bit on some of the hourly employees I have, but then again, I'm also going to take the hit on this just a bit. But I got to pass some of this along to my customers here. I love my customer base, you know, people may say, but there you go. Now, again, I don't think this has any, having said all I have said in the first 30 minutes, I don't think this has any gosh darn bit of happening. But it's an interesting thought and something we always talk about. And it's going to be top of mind. And there's a reason Chris Murphy is introducing this, because you have a big midterm election wave coming up. And then you also have the 2028 race. And Chris Murphy was saying earlier today, I saw on another outlet saying, hey, maybe this is a way to win back the disenfranchised voters, a lot of male voters, who went over to Donald Trump and the Republicans in the past 4 years. So how about that? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. All right, you've probably seen all the fireworks stands being set up heading into this weekend and next weekend. You're seeing them in the Walmart parking lot, Stop and Shop, a lot of them also. And look, the vast majority of people know how to do this, know how not to do dumb things, but there are a lot of knuckleheads out there who, need the idiot stick whacked across their rear. Joining us right now to talk about fire safety heading into this weekend, next weekend, July 4th, and all over the summer. We've had Jamie on before. Jamie Vincent, the fire marshal in the great town of Orange, Connecticut. Jamie, it's Paul again. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Do you drive around, Jamie, and see these fireworks stands going up since we loosened the laws a bunch of years ago? And does part of you go, okay, here we go again? Does that ever tickle across your mind or not?
We did an inspection of one this morning, and they're popping up all over the place. Historically, they come into play about a week before the holiday, and then usually on the 5th, they're gone.
Yeah. So when you do an inspection, Jamie, looking for this, what are you looking for? What they can sell legally, whether there's any contraband there? Walk us through an inspection.
So we normally go through a site. We'll check to make sure that they're following, obviously, all the regulations. That includes making sure that everything that they've displayed for sale meets the rules. It can't have any effect other than a shower of sparks, which means you can buy fountains and sparklers, but anything that has an aerial display or an explosive report is illegal in the state of Connecticut. In addition to that, they have to have signage saying that you cannot light the fireworks at the store. I can't even call them fireworks. They're fountains, but you can't open them, light them at the store within 300 feet of the business, and that they must have signs that say that you have to be at least 16 years of old to purchase, possess, and or use the material.
So then they should not be selling M80s, cherry bombs. Can they sell Roman candles? What exactly? You said what they can sell. What can they not sell that the average person would really know what it is?
Pretty much everything you listed, Paul, is 100% illegal. If it goes boom or goes in the sky, it's considered illegal in the state of Connecticut. And to be honest with you, depending on the size or the amount of pyrotechnic mixture in it, it could go from possession of fireworks to possession of explosives, which now becomes a felony. So the only thing you can legally purchase is something that shoots out sparks, and that's it.
And even the sparkler, Jamie, and Jamie Vincent, the fire marshal of the great town of Orange, joins us here. Even the sparkler, what did I read? The point of where that sucker is burning and people are holding it and little kids are waving it around. What is it? It's 2,000 degrees or something like that?
That's correct. Those wire sticks with the pyrotechnic mixture can get up to 2,000 degrees. If you look at the statistics from 2024, 1,700 incidents where injuries were reported were from sparklers alone. Almost 15,000 nationwide were reported from incidents involving fireworks, which was a 52% increase from the year prior.
And people have been killed by this. I mean, sadly, and some of the information you sent me here, Jamie, says it, and I know it because I'm in the news business. I mean, sadly, people die from this.
Correct. In 2024, which is the latest statistics we could get, they had 11 people that died from fireworks-related incidents.
Jamie Vincent, the fire marshal of the great town of Orange, joins us. So where the stuff that's not legal in Connecticut, Jamie, that goes in the air, or that you said goes boom in any level, way, or scale, that comes in how? Contraband, or I know a guy, or I got a guy, wink, wink, nod, nod, and people just pay whatever it is?
I think you've kind of hit them all. to be honest with you, there are plenty of people that have that friend that travel to states that legally sell this stuff. And what they'll do is they'll pull their money and go and buy it and bring it back into the states. And whether they purchase them for personal use or they buy a lot of them and then turn around and sell them, regardless, it's illegal to bring it back in. So, yeah, it's 100% contraband.
A lot of them come in, Jamie, from other countries. You said other states. Well, before I ask you about the country thing, because I would ask about China, because they're really good with fireworks. What are the laws like in the neighboring states, Jamie? Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York. Are there loopholes that make people that you know cross the state line and get what they can't get here in Connecticut, or are they uniform with us?
So if you look at the states that are immediately surrounding us, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New York, they're pretty close to what we have. But when you get into New Hampshire, Vermont, Pennsylvania, they're a lot more lax. You can pretty much buy anything you like. So it's a benefit because you can go there and buy the things that you can't get here. And it always turns into that competition to see whose neighbor can outdo the next one. So that's really what the draw is, to just kind of enjoy the fireworks and you know, that's the only way you can get them is either through purchasing someone who made the trip or make it yourself.
Yeah, and I would imagine now, is that a, and I don't mean to ask you a law enforcement question, is, but if somebody maybe over the weekend or next week says, hey, I'm going to New Hampshire, and they get over the line, and once you get over the line, you know, from booze to guns or whatever, live free or die up there. I mean, we all know that. We've been there. Is it a crime then, Jamie? Do we know where if I went and bought a box of M80s up in, you know, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and brought them back here, is that illegal or not?
Correct. As soon as you cross the state line, the state laws apply. So you would be facing possible issues with being in possession of the fireworks. And like I said, when you look at the larger items, it goes from possession of fireworks to possession of explosives. So it goes from a misdemeanor to a felony.
I don't want to get particularly graphic here around the dinner hour, Jamie Vincent, but can you give us one or two examples of maybe something you have seen where it was just law-breaking, stupidity, low-quality stuff that they bought in here? A couple of things that maybe you have seen over the years that might convince some of our listeners, hey, we'll just do the sparklers here and that's it. What have you seen that you just shook your head about?
We've seen quite a few. The one that comes to mind was there were two gentlemen that were probably around 17, 18 years old. They were playing with fireworks. They were lighting them and throwing them out of the car. Unfortunately, the fireworks fast fused on them, and before they can get it thrown out of the car, it went off inside the vehicle, which injured them and damaged the vehicle as well. And that's normally what happens when you get the cheaper products. They're not exactly made the way you expect it to work, and unfortunately, that's when people get hurt.
Yeah, and that's another thing, finally, Jamie. I remember, you know, playing with some... are salutes illegal, too?
Are illegal, yep.
Yeah, and I remember a salute on a fast fuse in my right hand. Now, luckily, it was kind of leaving my hand before I could toss it, and my fingers, you know, they're okay now. They still work 40, 50 years later. But, yeah, it's...
You were very lucky.
Yeah. If the fuse is fast, and that's a quality control thing, right, and stuff that may be contraband
correct.
Or secondhand, right?
Correct. That is correct.
Jamie, thank you. Jamie Vincent, the guest here on WICC, the Town of Orange Fire Marshal. Like you said, Jamie, one more time, please just tell people the only things that are legal this weekend and next weekend would be?
Absolutely. They are sparklers or fountains, and that is it. And you must be 16 to purchase, use, and possess.
All right, Jamie Vincent. Jamie, thanks. We'll chat down the road. Appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Jamie Vincent. You hear that, folks? Well, we've got a report earlier in the week, I think today or yesterday, from Terrence Chang. Now, you remember him. He kind of had to be pushed down to a further office down the hall after some funny business with his P card when he ran the Connecticut State College and University system. Joining us right now to give us a lowdown on that and what may be in the report and see if it was worth it in the end, Republican State Senate member Dr. Jeff Gordon, Republican of Woodstock. Jeff, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing all right, my friend. Well, this is the long-anticipated, wink-wink, quote-unquote, report here from Terrence Chang, who, rather than being fired, they figured, well, let's let him play it out, but let's let him do something. And the something, I kind of scrolled through it, is a pretty extensive report here, Jeff. What are your thoughts on that, A, how this whole thing ended, and B, did you get a chance to peruse that? And do we know if there's anything useful in that, or was this kind of just a make-work thing to keep him quiet?
Well, 2,007 pages. I haven't a chance to read all of that. I don't know who's going to be able to read that. The state's paying him $400,000 a year. This comes out to $200 a page. And it's extremely concerning if this is the work product that we're getting. Who knows what substance there really is in it, and we're going to have to figure that one out and read through the executive summary. But I would love a job where the taxpayers pay me $200 a page to generate a 2,000-page report, and you don't even have to show up at work to do it.
Yeah, not too shabby, Jeff, not too shabby. But nonetheless, though, have we learned anything about the Connecticut State College and University system, because there's this constant hue and cry, you guys and gals here in the General Assembly, about money and staffing. And now we're on our second successor to Dr. Cheng. We already had a resignation here. What is there anything wrong here with the who's high and mighty at the state colleges and universities? Or is this just bad luck or willful ignorance or negligence? What's going on here?
I think this just shows a systemic failure at the upper levels of CSCU. I don't blame the individual campuses, the teachers, the students. I visited near my district, Eastern, many, many times. Mm-hmm. Very good programs, very good leadership there. But at the very top of CSCU and with the regents, this is just showing massive problems. You know, we're now on to our third interim chair. We're into the fact that we've had chairs of the board have to step down for serious misconduct allegations. Their counsel had to step down for serious misconduct allegations. You know, now we have Terrence Chang issuing this massively long report at $400,000 a year. And he even admits in the report he used AI. And who knows how much AI he used to write this type of thing. So I think it shows that the leadership of CSCU and the board that oversees it is off in a different direction, not focused on the students, not focused on the teachers. And we really need a massive clean sweep. And I think a big restructuring of how the whole CSCU system is organized and led, and bring it back to focus on what it's supposed to be, which is education.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be, Jeff, and the guest is Dr. Jeff Gordon, it's supposed to be, now that UConn is unreachable for a lot of people, even in-state because of money, now we're down to the state colleges and universities, which, as you say, they do a great job, but there are fiscal concerns there that in a few years, even that system, Jeff, may be out of reach for some people who don't have a lot of money but yet want to achieve in life and get a college degree.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very serious concern. And this is why we really need to delve more into this and figure out what is going on, what's gone off the rails, but also what's still staying on the rails and working that we can better support, because we don't want to price out hardworking students, especially those from low, middle-income families, where this is the only higher education opportunities for them to advance and get into good-paying careers in our state. So we really need to get a handle on this. It doesn't look like CSCU leadership is able to do that, including with the roller coaster ride of what's going on at the leadership. And that's the legislature just needs to step in. I hope the governor will join us. No reason for us to wait until we go back into session in January. This is something we should be looking into now. I know I have some meetings upcoming with the leadership of CSCU to really find out what's going on and what we can do to make it better. And for me, we really should be doing that in a non-political way and stop the craziness that right now just seems to be happening week after week.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you. We'll tap into you again after you have that meeting. Those meetings should be fascinating stuff. Republican State Senator Dr. Jeff Gordon of Woodstock. Jeff, thanks. Have a happy weekend. Stay safe out there, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, Jeff.
You too. Thank you.
All right, there you go.